Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. We're talking NXT for August the 29th, 2023. We are in a post-Bray Wyatt world. We saw his video again today, and we won't belabor it unless we want to talk about any of the... I don't think Nate was with us yet, was with the show yet when it started, so I don't think he saw the days of Bray Wyatt there. The days of Bray Wyatt on this brand were brief, and the only thing I can say about it, having recently covered it again in NXT 8 years back, is when he and eventually Luke Harper were in their videos as the Wyatt family. Eric wasn't in any of the videos, and he hit the ring later. They did them kind of in just as big of a wooded area they could find, really near the performance center, which wasn't very wooded. So it just looked like kind of like a cheap video of people having fun. But he was so committed, and so was Luke. He was great at being creepy, and he was so committed to that. Bray was. And even though the video looked like cheap guerrilla filmmaking, you could tell the character was going to work. You could tell that the act had something that was as big of a hook as they needed. He never got close to the championship. That's not what they did with him. They just kind of, the guys were the tag champs, but yeah, this was not a group that needed to be in NXT for very long at all. So they dropped their belts, they moved up, and the rest is history. And we have now lost two tremendous, really fun wrestling acts in just the last few years. So a real bummer. That is an understatement. I was broken by this, and I can't see that picture of him brushing his kid's hair again. I don't think I can get through it. Pretty tough stuff. Bruce, who are you? And any thoughts on Bray Wyatt?
I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at @B_Lee253. I started a new job a couple weeks ago, and I happened to be home on my lunch break when I refreshed Twitter, and it said 2 minutes ago, Triple H. I was writing a tweet, and I just... At first, I couldn't believe it, and I had to make sure it was the actual Triple H account before I shared it with anybody. But it's just, it's tough because, you know, you just heard even last, or the week before, I guess, that he seemed to be improving and getting ready for return, and suddenly to just have that happen. When I saw the video on Friday, the one thing that made me really crack was him brushing his kid's hair, and that's exactly what happened again tonight, seeing that again. And, you know, you just really feel bad, hopeful for JoJo and the rest of the family, because they have a strong support group, but just such a great, charismatic and creative talent. And, you know, he's one of those where his creativity was probably too advanced for our time, and to a certain extent that held him back, but it's also going to make him remembered for a long time, not just because of his untimely and terrible death, but because of all the things that he did that really pushed the boundaries of what we come to expect of pro wrestling. You know, the Firefly Funhouse match is still one of my favorite matches of all time, and that's not something that we would have had if it wasn't for him. And the videos with the Wyatt family, those vignettes, those were just some amazing things that they did, and the believability of his character, or at least the believability of acts, the amount of passion he put into his character. You don't get that with everybody. And they asked him to do, whether it was Wyatt family, whether it was The Fiend, whether it was Funhouse Bray, he excelled. It just is, yeah, nothing more you can say besides unfortunate. Just hoping that the family pull through and have some bright days ahead.
Much like the Undertaker gimmick, if the performer had gone half-assed at it, we would be talking about it still today as one of the worst gimmicks ever. Because like The Undertaker, on paper, the gimmick is stupid. If you don't get somebody who can make that work, like people talk about it casually like it was the best idea ever. I'm not sure that's true. That's what I love about these acts. They are acts that seem really stupid on paper. And for some people, both of them didn't work at certain times. And indeed, Undertaker dying and ascending to heaven in the form of Marty Jannetty in a suit maybe isn't going to work for everybody. But I might be talking about myself here. But these are characters that you really, really have to commit to make work. And Bray is the type of character that isn't in wrestling that much anymore. So, I mean, it's not like we've totally moved away from the supernatural. We do have Humberto Garza talking to his grandsons from beyond the grave.
You mean Humberto Carrillo?
Right. Humberto Garza is the one who's dead, and he's talking to Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza. He's the portmanteau. I'm off script. Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt. The news still hasn't quite, I think, sunk in yet. Some of the wrestlers that I've always kind of gravitated towards, Mick Foley, Kevin Owens, Bray Wyatt, I've never been, I guess now I'm finally somewhat in shape and, you know, under like 200 pounds and all that stuff. But for the majority of my life, you know,
that ladies, Nate is available
and single. So, hey, there we go. I've always gravitated towards kind of the bigger guys and, you know, somebody like Foley or, you know, Kevin Owens or Bray Wyatt that kind of I connected with a little bit more. They didn't look like your stereotypical wrestler. But that's not just the look, but I mean, obviously everything else that everybody's talking about, the creativity, the mindset that he had, and it's just a massive blow to the wrestling community. What really hits home for me is the fact that he was 36 years old and died of heart issues, and I'm 35 years old and I was just diagnosed diabetic and have a lot of heart issues in my family. So it's a little bit terrifying, I'm not going to lie, that he was only a little more than a year older than me and is now gone. Take care of yourselves, people. That's all I can say.
All right, let's go to our main event. Roxanne Perez versus Gigi Dolin versus Kiana James versus Blair Davenport in a four-way for the number one contendership. Whose idea was it that it was my turn to recap? This was tough to do. The women did not let up. A couple of moves that showed a wee bit of light in this one. But for the most part, other than a couple of camera angles that could have really done them a solid, this was fun stuff. More of a spot fest than a match with any flow, but on the very positive side of things, all three losing wrestlers had a big showcase and a moment where it seemed like they could win, especially Gigi, because I think Gigi probably was the one that the most of us would have picked as being the most likely because she was one of the two baby faces and she's the one who has not yet been at that level. Not been a champion because Roxy has already, but they both got their shine. However, Kiana James came out to a new high concept entrance video. So I was like, well, it might be her. And if they're going to throw a match out there on free TV, not save it for a PLE or even a PLE light, maybe that's the match you throw out there. And Kiana James either sinks or swims. I will say that at times she has been slow, and at times Gigi Dolin has been slow as far as offense, but they didn't do that tonight. They really sped things up. And that's not something – James has been getting steadily better, and Dolin has been kind of, I would say, almost frustratingly the same in that regard as she has been for a while. But I didn't get that tonight. In fact, she was so revved up that I really got the chance, got the feeling that maybe she was winning and knew it. It was not the case. She ate the pin in the end to Kiana James after a series of moves too numerous for me to try to remember. 11 minutes and 38 seconds. Kiana James will move on to face champion Tiffany Stratton next week. Nate, what do you think?
I'm pretty high on this. The you know, when it comes to like multi-person matches, I've said a million times, I'll say it again. I'm not always a massive fan because you get very chaotic and very frenetic and hard to follow. But I think they did a pretty good job here. I mean, like you said, it was somewhat of a spot fest here and there. I think they could have done without the Tower of Doom spot, which gets done in every single Fatal 4-person match ever. They could have done without that. But like, for example, like that spot where Roxanne was trying to flip everybody over into the 3-person Boston Crab when everybody else had each other in some sort of a submission move. Like, that was kind of cool. I've certainly seen something similar like that before. It's not a new, unique idea, but it's different. It's not something that we see all the time. So I definitely give them credit for that. I thought, like you said, Kelly, I think everybody had their kind of moment to shine here in the match. For me going into this, Gigi Dolin was not the person I was picking to win this. I actually was looking at Blair Davenport. Granted, she is a heel, so is Tiffany Stratton. I was thinking about this, and I wrote this in the Hits and Misses too. Out of everybody in the ring, she's the only one that, like, if this was a legit fight, I think would actually be able to kick the ass of all the other 3 competitors here in the match. Not only that, plus the kind of the story that they've been telling with her, it's been a little weird because she was kind of like jumped into that Dana Brooke, Kalani Jordan story for a little bit. But the fact that they're constantly telling us that Blair Davenport's forced to be reckoned with, and she's kind of a big deal, that kind of made me think maybe that's where they were going. The other one that I had was Roxanne Perez. She's clearly the biggest baby face here in the match. She's a fan favorite, she lost her title, never really got a proper rematch for it. So I feel like you could make the case for it there. I was kind of surprised to see Kiana James get the victory here. She was really the only person that I wasn't thinking about to pick up the win, probably the least likely. And I love it when that happens because I'm surprised. It's not very often as a wrestling fan that, like, I'm super surprised. I was fine with that. She's come such a long way in the last year or so. So I think she'll actually be able to get, her and Tiffany Stratton will be able to have a decent match. It's going to be interesting because kind of like the heel dynamic there, but is what it is. I'm curious to see where they go with it. I don't think Kiana's winning, but I think it at least shows that they have they've got some faith in her.
Bruce, and I suppose we could roll in. They all had their little moments on the mic and those pre-recorded statements. I don't think there was anything to say other than they all did fine.
Yeah, and I actually appreciate how they paced these out throughout the night and how each woman had a mission statement beyond "I want to be the next woman's champion." They had legitimate reasons to go in there and for each of their characters, I guess, for why they're in that match, why they're going to walk out the champion. And so really like that. I like Blair Davenport the most, but I also want to put over Roxanne Perez because she's really trying. And she's really trying to put over the fact that she needs to be stopped. People need to stop thinking of her as still some kind of rookie or some up-and-comer with potential and think of her as the now because that's what she wants to. Good for them on these vignettes heading into the match. Each one did a good job. And then Kelly took a lot of what I was going to say in terms of James and Dolin. I think with Gigi Dolin, this was her best match in NXT that at least I can remember, especially one that didn't involve being a tag match or a six-woman with Toxic Attraction. So to me, you know, I didn't really have an idea of who would win this match coming into it. Like Kelly said, the helicopter coming down on the Tron for Kieran James should have been a signal. But to me, the part of the match that made me think that Kieran James was about to win was actually a part that happened a little before the end, and that's when Davenport somehow cleared the ring of, I think it was Dolan, and then hit Roxanne Perez with that her kind of modified Falcon Arrow. And I thought, oh, Kiana James is right there in the ring. This is going to set up for her to get the victory. They still kept going from there, but I figured that from that point it was going to be Kiana James, even after she was kind of eliminated later in the match for a bit. I do like some of the spots in the match. They're a bit unique, like when Perez was getting ready to hit, I think it was Gigi Dolan on the outside with Pop Rocks, and Davenport kicked her in the back right as she was, or, you know, back of the head, the back, right as she was going into Pop Rocks. So the momentum carried Dolan into the move, but then Perez was effectively, you know, injured after that from the kick. There was the Pop Rocks in the ring to Davenport, where it was a believable spot that the momentum of the move would actually make force her out of the ring. I like that. And then the end of the match was when James, so a little early in the match, Gigi Dolan was grabbing Perez by the hair, talking smack to her. And that kind of set up the ending where Perez was bending over, grabbing Dolan by the hair and talking smack to her, which allowed James to hit 401K. And then whatever you want to call that move to finish off Dolan and get the victory. So for me, and I've been saying it for a while, that Davenport's going to beat Stratton after Stratton turns face. I think next week's where you're going to start the face turn. I'm gonna predict that James is gonna throw everything out there to try to win all the heel stuff, and Stratton just, you know, pins her clean, doesn't do anything beyond what a usual babyface would do in a match, and she comes out of that having overcome all that, and then sort of starts the face turn, and you get the eventual Davenport Stratton match and Davenport winning. Because I haven't even looked at recaps or listen to recaps for SmackDown and Raw. All I watched was that Bray Wyatt video. But I did see that Tiffany Stratton was introduced, I think it was on SmackDown or on Raw, in the crowd. So I have a feeling that she is going to be up there sooner rather than later. And to me, there's a lot of money in a babyface Stratton run. So I think that's what they're going to start next week in that match with Kiana James.
Oh, probably, but snotty Tiffany, though. She's so much fun.
But you know how NXT does these things. Like, they had Braun, they refused to make Breaker a heel for so long, even when their product was suffering, and they finally made him one, and, I mean, we see him now, but yeah. They're going to do these things in NXT.
They should definitely test her out, even if for, like, 2 months before bringing her up as a heel. It should be tested out. See what they got years before they might end up doing it. Tournaments, I love them. Tournaments with blocks in them, a la New Japan, I like them even more. They even bothered to explain this time, which is something they did not do a good job of during the Cruiserweight Classic, or Cruiserweight, not the Classic, during the Cruiserweight tournament, where Santos Escobar won and turned heel in the process and dropped his mask in the process. So all that happened as a result of that tournament. But there were times when the announcers were straight up, like, they didn't even realize, oh, this block is over. We have a winner. They said, he's on top of his block right now. He's leading. I'm like, no, he just won. The block matches are over. They didn't. Even the announcers were in the dark. So they really have put this over here. 12-minute time limit, a weird time limit. But if this one was going to go over 10 but under 12, then whatever. Because one of them did tonight. Two win, 2 points for a pinfall or submission, 1 point for a draw. They didn't say anything about disqualifications or countouts, so perhaps a sign that we are not getting any. But yeah, that's what they gave us, and everybody in the blocks will face everyone. And wisely, a couple of the matches that are a bit lesser, they're putting on Level Up. So, which gives them a reason to have people tune in to Level Up, which I might actually do, just because when it comes to these tournaments, I am a completist. I got to see it all. Okay, we got two of those matches tonight. Group A, Butch versus Charlie Dempsey. This was British guys being British. That is what this match was. 4 minutes and 50 seconds. Butch goes over Charlie Dempsey with the bitter end after a nice bit of angry British technical style. And then in the other one, Joe Coffey defeats Nathan Fraser in 10 minutes and 10 seconds in a match that was pretty nice outside of an ugly slash scary moment where Fraser got kind of hung up and choked on a rope just from an awkward landing when he ran the ropes. I mean, running the ropes seems so basic, but it's amazing how many wrestlers would talk about it like, it hurts and it's not fun. And we do it all the time, so it looks like it's basic, but it kind of sucks. Things happen on those ropes, folks. So at any rate, first two matches in the books, and not a lot of story yet. They'll probably save that for down the stretch when things are getting really nip and tuck for the top people in their blocks. Bruce, on the Invitational.
Yeah, I really like how they put the graphic out there and explain the rules and the round robin style. The only thing I think that was missing on the points graphic was the diagonal line going across the boxes to indicate which match is which. But I think it's well laid out, a good mixture of people. It's funny that you called the first match a battle between two British folk when Dempsey is technically representing the U.S., but his father is definitely British.
Oh, yeah. I can't make him British for the life, or American for the life of me, even though I know he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you know who his father is to think of him as from the U.S. So, but then you think about it, yeah, his father is definitely probably, you know, they probably had him here while he was working in probably WWE at the time, if I have his age guesstimated correctly. But that aside, for me, what I liked most about this first match, well, Pete Dunne got the biggest pop of the night, let's put that aside. But what I liked the most about this match was, of course, the technical stuff, but it was Charlie Dempsey's bridging butterfly suplex. It's just a technical masterpiece when you watch him do that and to bridge so beautifully and to have that kind of, you know, neck strength and everything else that goes into being able to do that. It's kind of ridiculous, and I just really appreciate that. Really good match. Probably the right winner here. I haven't really examined the brackets or the sides of the blocks enough to come to a determination on who I think would be the winner of each block. But the second match with Fraser and Coffey, what do you expect? Good match. I do think that Coffey going over here was the right call. I think with Fraser, even though it's more of a mini tournament than the G1, you could have one of those come from behind sort of things with Fraser going forward. And Coffey hasn't battled for the NXT Heritage Cup, I don't think, while stateside. So it could be, you know, he may emerge as the block victor. But good match. What I liked about the overall kind of scene with these two matches was having Metaphor in their own little section up top, observing with the Heritage Cup right there. And then, of course, we did have Noam Dar getting involved later with in a promo. But I think having that presence there, reminding people of what they're fighting for in this tournament, was a nice little touch there that adds a bit of importance to what they're doing, even more so than just saying, hey, they're battling for a shot at the Heritage Cup.
Nate?
I dug these two matches. The Heritage Cup in general, like the format of the match is like, I think phenomenal. So the fact that they're kind of taking something similar to that, they're putting it in these, you know, these block matches, these round robin matches. I love it. You know, we Kelly brought up earlier, we saw it once before, at least once before in the NXT with that cruiserweight tournament to crown the interim cruiserweight champion. A year and a half, 2 years ago. Geez, probably longer than that. God, that was the beginning of COVID. That's like 3 years ago now. Time flies, people. Time flies. So yeah, I really dig it. It's different. It kind of gives it a more of a big fight feel. Maybe not big fight feel is the word I'm looking for, or the phrase I'm looking for. More of a like an actual legitimate shoot fight feel, I guess, with kind of those added rules and things to it. I also think that, you know, the people who won here tonight, they were the right people to go over. You know, Nathan Frazier and his loss, you know, the first thing that went through my mind when he lost was kind of similar to what Bruce just said. You know, he could come from behind still. It's not like he's out of the tournament or out of the invitational or anything like that. You know, he just doesn't have as many points as the two winners here tonight. So definitely dug it. That botch where he got hung up on the ropes was like kind of terrifying. I saw that and like saw him, you know, kind of hit the ground and just a little nervous for a little bit there. And I think it was, I don't know if he was just selling it afterwards or if he was actually kind of hurt from that. I feel like he lost a step a little bit after that. You know, it looked like to me when he ran the ropes, he was just he was a little bit too low when he hit the top rope and his shoulder just kind of slipped underneath the rope. Like, you know, obviously sweaty running around the ring and stuff. So kind of like the rope kind of slipped up and, you know, up over his head and his head just kind of like bounced around. Terrible looking. It reminded me of that Enzo Amore botch when Simon Gotch tried to throw him outside and he hit the mat and then head bounced off the mat and bounced off the bottom rope, knocked himself out, thought he was dead. Wasn't quite that gnarly, but it certainly was one of the first things that went through my mind. Botch aside, though, I thought, you know, I think that was the better of the two matches for me anyway. I enjoyed that one a little bit more. Joe Coffey, that was probably the right move to go over, for him to go over. There's something else I was going to say. Don't remember what it was, so we'll move on.
Let's just say Butch is really cool.
Yep.
Okay.
Butch is awesome.
There you go. Your opening match, Creed Brothers versus Dyad in a cage. this opening. The Dyad jumps Brutus, takes him out of the match. Julius is in the ring with the two members of the Dyad, and the ref's like, good enough for me. Calls for
Call
Bill. And he's like, sure. Not a two-on-one thing to me tonight. It
right.
was so stupid. And then, you know, all's well. It gave Brutus his big comeback or something like that. But the bell should have sounded first and then had that happen. It's all they had to do to clean that up. Fun stuff here at quite a few turns. But what really stuns me, what really gets me about the Dyad in their matches with the Creeds is they are never, ever once made to look like they can do anything on offense when it's a fair one-on-one. Anything. They get squashed when the match is finally fair. And all of their offense is two-on-one, and they don't even get all of that offense. And that is old-school cheating heels versus better wrestler, quote-unquote, baby faces. Like, that's the way it has always been. But it's really weird to see. These matches are so one-sided when the Creeds are on offense. Now that the Dyad have lost this match, I guess maybe we find out if what's going on with their contract status, because they certainly haven't shied away from giving these guys matches, giving them mic time, when if they're really going away, they could just job them out off of TV. So I don't know. I'm hoping they turn babyface and don't leave. And if not turn babyface, at least turn into the Grizzled Young Veterans. Because, oh my God, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But at any rate, in about 15 minutes, I don't know exactly. I had to watch this on my phone rather than time it with my phone because my internet had a blip right at the moment of executive producer Dick Wolf at the end of Law & Order, which by the way, this was one of the all-time funny, melodramatic endings. I've only ever seen the ending of this show, of this version of Law & Order. It's always funny, unintentionally. This one was hilarious. Anyway, it was about 15 minutes. So you'd think that it was evenly fought, but I don't know. I guess it didn't look to me that way. Creed Brothers versus Dyad, Bruce.
The spot that everyone's talking about in this match is when Julius had Fowler in an ankle lock, and then Reed came at him, and he basically with one arm just gave him a power bomb. So that is the one going around social media right now. Everyone's talking about that. Yeah, Julius Creed is built different. Let's just put it that way. The other big spot from this match was when Julius was able to have both of Dyad on his shoulders, and Brutus hit a Brutus ball from the top rope to both of them. Unlike most steel cage matches, we did not see any leaps from the top of the cage. Instead, what we got was Brutus breaking the door off its hinges and then using the door in the match kind of as a weapon. I thought how they used the door was very unsatisfactory to me. They could have done so much more with what they did. And when the one time they did use it really well, when they started choking the Dyad with it, Brutus immediately lifted the door back up and put it aside. So I think the failed use of the door there, the match was a match. I don't remember if their contracts were up September 1st or September 30th and they're free October 1st. But like you, I'm hoping that they do stay and they return as GYV. At the very end of the match, Booker T noted that Ava left the ring while Gacy was out there staring basically incredulously at the victorious Creed Brothers and Ivy Nile out there. So this could have been a clean dissolution of Schism, and we see everyone go their separate ways, including the Dyad, hopefully becoming Grizzly Young Veterans. So I say keep an eye out. We might not see any of them. Maybe Gacy, but the other three might not see them. Especially if their contracts are up, but Ava especially, we might not see them for a month or two, which is exactly what I had advocated for in the past, getting her off TV, having her just do some more training, and then reintroduce her, re-debut her with a different character, a different everything, and see how it goes from there. So they might be doing that here, and I hope that's what they do. And, you know, if they want to keep Gacy off TV, that's no problem with me, too.
Dissolution of the Schism. I'm listening. Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, so this was, I don't know, this match existed for me. Like, I kind of checked out of this angle like 2 or 3 weeks ago, to be honest. And then last week when the reveal that the Creeds were, you know, in the yellow masks the whole time was like, whoa, guys, that was so unexpected. Holy crap. I kind of checked out of this angle. So, and the other thing is last week, like, you know, here we are, we got the Creeds, they're kidnapping Ava. They're saying, hey, if you win, we get Ava back. If we win, we get reinstated. And then Ava shows up tonight with Schism, kind of null and voiding the whole thing, which I guess is fine, because do you really want your baby faces committing kidnapping and, you know, things like that, holding people against their will? Probably not. So fine is what it is, but whatever. I thought that was a little, like, when I saw Ava come out right at the beginning of the show with Schism, I was like, wait a minute, I thought she was in the possession of the Creed Brothers, but whatever. I guess, you know, human trafficking is not a good thing. Let's see. So yeah, other than that, like, the Creeds getting the win here, I feel like, was the right move, especially, you know, getting them reinstated in NXT. It didn't seem like they were going to the main roster, so, you know, what the hell, give them something to do back down here in NXT and all of that. I don't know if there was ever a plan for them to go to the main rosters. Probably not. Probably just this particular angle. The spot with Brutus and the door, I thought was fantastic. Like, he ripped that thing off its hinges easier than Kane did the door to Hell in a Cell back in 97, which I thought was fantastic, especially a hell of a lot easier than Mark Henry at that time. He couldn't rip the chain off the door. Well, then eventually did actually legit rip the chain off the door, because it wasn't a gimmick, because he is actually, like, one of the world's strongest people. I thought it was a fantastic segment, really... Our spot in the match, rather, it really kind of sold just the brute strength of Brutus. I just wish that was all they did with the door. You know, when they used it as a weapon, like Kelly, I forget who, I think it was Bruce that just said, it was like, yeah, they were using it to choke out the Grizzly Young Vets and then like immediately like pick it up and stuff and stop the choke. It was a little weird, like kind of the spots that they chose to use the door as a weapon afterwards, but whatever, give them a bit of a pass. I gave this match a hit in the hits and misses, but like by the skin of its teeth for me. Not because it wasn't a good match, but because I'm just not very invested in this angle anymore. I'd like to see the Creeds do something else. I'd like to see Ivy and Isle do something else. And I'd like to see Schism go away. I'd like to see Grizzled Young Vets become the Grizzled Young Vets again. By the way, while you were talking, Bruce, I looked up their contract stuff. From everything I'm seeing online, I'm seeing things that say the September, and then just September 2023, but I'm also seeing beginning of October. So my guess is their contract's probably up at the end of September, and they'll be free agents beginning of October unless they re-sign. So no problem, but that'll do it for me for now.
Let's go to an email. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Number one, I think the way the Creeds have been handled over the last few months really took away from tonight's match. Why should anyone believe that their careers hang in the balance when that's already come to fruition once before and they just came back with the basic reason being because they wanted to? I can't say it any better than that, JB. They literally lost the Loser Leaves Town match and now they're back and nobody is acting like it matters. Number two, I think the Heritage Cup should be a trophy that is defended in the Global Heritage Invitation once a year, similar to the Dynamite Diamond Ring in AEW. If it's defended regularly like it is in its current state, it really just becomes another NXT title and trinket to be fought over, which is something I don't think NXT needs at this time. I would agree, except for a couple of reasons. One, Noam Dar. A trinket for that man is exactly what you need. Two, if it's going to be defended, it's hard to – I mean, the person who's going to win that is likely high enough up the card that they're likely to be on the main roster in the near future. I don't know. For me, this title works because it's so different, because the matches are so different. It's weird to me that the tournament isn't being wrestled under those rules, but those rules lend to – long matches, even if they're not long. I mean, there's breaks in between them. They're long segments, so you can't necessarily do that with the tournament on there, although it's kind of weird. When they're fighting for the chance to be in a match type, they're not even doing in the tournament. Anyway, number three, Carmelo Hayes referred to the Street Profits as one of the greatest tag teams of all time tonight, which I think is a bit generous, to say the least. It is, but they're there, so who cares? Four, what are your thoughts on the seemingly self-made promo videos of several wrestlers tonight, including Wes Lee? My thoughts on selfie videos are they can be cool if there's a reason for them and if they are not a mandate. Like 5-6 years ago when everything in WWE that they had, every idea they had, they did with everyone. Words on the screen for
words all over the screen.
And
oh,
words
God.
On the screen would have been great if it was just one irritating heel act that was too big for their britches. And it was them thinking their words were big enough to be that important. And the selfie videos were great until I realized it wasn't just a snooty heel doing them. It was literally everyone. In their effort to lend realism, they took it away by making it 100% of people, because that's what Vince does. If that's what we do, that's what everybody do. I don't know why they did that. That frustrated me. So I weighed in. Nate, anything on the email?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about the Creeds already. You have the whole stipulation of, you know, of them getting kicked out of NXT and now nobody really cares. That's wrestling. I don't know if it's necessarily the right move, but I mean, how many times have we seen, you know, with Terry Funk retirement, and I'm still expecting him to come back, honestly. So, you know, it's, or Ric Flair retirement, Mick Foley retirement. You know, I know we're not talking about retirements, but that's, of course, the only thing that's coming to my mind right now. But, you know, going back on a stipulation is, yeah, that's a wrestling thing. You know, matter of fact, I was watching a Mick Foley interview the other day where he was talking about after his it was after the match with Triple H in Hell in a Cell. Was it No Way Out right before WrestleMania 2000? You know, he's like, I'm done. I'm never going to wrestle again. Never going to wrestle again. And then, of course, you know, he gets a phone call from Michael Hayes. And you know, Michael Hayes is like, yeah, we get plans here at WrestleMania. And he's like, well, what about the stipulation? He's like, yeah, we'll figure something out. Yeah, we can get around it. We can get out of it. It's wrestling, you know. And it's like, they don't even really necessarily care about it internally a lot of times. You know, it's just kind of a plot device to make people care, tune in, and the reason to, you know, get people in the ring and do the wrestling thing. So, you know, whatever, it's fine. Plus it kind of gives you a nice moment, like, all right, they just worked their way back in NXT for, I guess, more for the casual fans than for us to kind of like, you know, pick it apart and whatnot, but whatever. I kind of give that a pass. The Heritage Cup, I kind of like the idea of the Heritage Cup defended like once a year. Now, I don't know, maybe not once a year, but I like it being defended in the Invitational once a year, having this being like a, you know, a yearly tournament. I think it'd be kind of cool. I'm with Kelly where I dig this as a, like a secondary title in NXT because it is different. It's not like a regular title. Yeah, there's different rules and stipulations revolving the Heritage Cup, so it makes it feel different and unique. If this was just like, you know, a version of the, you know, we already have the North American title, and let's say we all of a sudden had, I don't know, the South American title or another European championship or something, like, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily care. But the Heritage Cup, it's different, and I think that is why it works in NXT, or at least it's working for me. I think it's working for the three of us anyway. Carmelo Hayes said the Street Profits, one of the greatest tag teams of all time, thinks a bit generous. I agree with that too, a bit generous, but the Street Profits are a great tag team. They probably will go down as a legendary tag team if they stay their current course and all of that. I think that a lot of the people that are watching today, they're, you know, fans that are younger fans or whatever, you know, and the Street Profits are kind of what they're growing up on. I think they're probably going to look back on the Street Profits as fondly as we do the Dudley Boys or, you know, the Hardy Boys or something like that. So while I wouldn't necessarily say they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time, you know, I can see why WWE said it, put their own tag teams over and stuff. But I think that, you know, Street Profits are also, out of every tag team that's in WWE right now, they're certainly one of the few that I think could at least be in that conversation down the road. The selfie promo videos, I'm with Kelly. If they do them in a way like the one Wesley did tonight, I thought that was great. It was just quick, kind of to the point. You know, it still sticks in my head. I know there was others tonight, but that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. So I like the way that was done. But yeah, as Kelly was saying, when they were doing it years ago, 5-6 years ago, words all over the screen, everybody's doing a selfie video. You get somebody like Braun Strowman, who at the time was completely against his character to be doing a selfie video, and now he's doing them. It was really weird. Didn't like it. But in this context and kind of doing it more, you know, how NXT has been doing them, I guess, recently, where they kind of seem like they're, you know, taken right off of social media or they're not like heavily curated. I'm okay with it. If it starts to get a little more like it did 5 or 6 years ago, yeah, probably not as much. And if you get words all over the screen, I quit. I'm not doing it anymore.
Bruce, did Nate leave a single thought on the table for you?
Yeah. Basically that when it comes to the Carmelo Hayes True Profit segment, I'll get back to that once we discuss the Trick and Trick Williams Carmelo Hayes segment. So there we go.
All right. Glad to help. Let's go to Eddie Thorpe versus Dijak. Let's slap some meat. 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Dijak is your winner over Eddie Thorpe. Dijak, You know, if you didn't see the ending coming after he made sure to throw that belt out of the ring at a very specific place, and when it got hung up, he was like, no, it has to be outside the ring, then if you didn't see that coming, I don't know what to tell you, wrestling fan. That's where it was headed. So sensible stuff here. Dijak needed the win, but Dijak can cheat to win because he's a bad guy. And Eddie Thorpe can lose in this way because he needs a mountain to climb. So there you go. I thought this was handled pretty well and really liked the beating they gave each other leading up to this. Some good, strong style stuff, Bruce.
Yeah, that's really what it was. Just a good, strong style match. They really went at it. I think, so when it comes to using the belt wrapped around the fist as something to deal damage, I think they covered for this at the end, but to me, it's really, wouldn't the only part that would actually hurt by doing that is if you nailed them with the buckle? So I couldn't tell during the match if he actually was able to hit him with the buckle, but when they came back to Dijak posing after winning the match, he made sure that the buckle was on the part of the fist that would have hit the face. So at least they covered for it there. It's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if wrapping your fist in the belt is actually that much more powerful, or at least powerful enough to have Thorpe sell the way he did for that punch. But the match itself was good. As you said, Thorpe needs a mountain to climb. Fritley needs some wins. We were just talking about how he doesn't get any wins. And here we have him getting a victory. And they made it, they protected Thorpe in a way by making Dijak need to use the belt to actually beat him. But Thorpe looked really good here, as you would expect. Dijak can really lay it in there with some of his strikes. And once that belt came into play, my first thought was, we're getting a strap match. So I think that's what's going to happen with these two to end the feud.
That's a good call.
All right. Nate, go ahead.
I like the strap match idea. I think that's a good idea. Don't have a whole heck of a lot to say that you didn't already say. Let's keep rolling on.
Let's indeed. There was one other match on here. Dana Brooke and Kalani Jordan versus Lola Vice and Electra Lopez. Crowd, do you want Lola to get over his heel? You got to tone it down with cheers for Lola Vice. Other than that, this was the best case scenario of this match that involved Dana Brooke, Lola Vice, and Electra Lopez. You know what? Lola's fine. I just, because of her being tied to like Dana Brooke and Electra Lopez, I've been assuming she wouldn't be good. That's not fair because I have not seen enough of her. She's probably completely a reasonable wrestler, but that has burrowed into my head. And Kalani Jordan, I do love her. So
hey, if it makes you feel any better, I had the same bias.
Yep. But Electra was fine in this. Dana was fine in this.
That MMA experience did not give you any hope? Come on now.
You know, I didn't know about it. So that didn't give me any hope because I don't remember. So there you go. 4 minutes and 1 second. So, you know, it didn't overstay its welcome, but Electra, I think Electra gets the pin on Kalani Jordan after a tandem move. We didn't get anything after the fact here, but the next obvious step here is Kalani was left in there to die after Dana basically lost her cool. And Dana more or less wrestled like a heel here. Lot of attacks that were overlong in the corner and things like that, and she was booed, as she is supposed to be. So what she's doing here, this turn, while she's in this babyface tag team, is working. I don't know if I want to see that much of it. She just has not been good in this run, but she was good in this match. So I don't know. What am I to say? Nate?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know what to say about this match either. I'm glad to see Kalani Jordan kind of starting to hopefully get a little bit away from Dana Brooke here. I'm kind of hoping it's the beginning of this feud between the two of them because we've kind of seen shades of. So far, I like what I see out of Kalani Jordan. And I just feel like her being tied to Dana Brooke is not a net positive. And I'll leave it at that. You guys can fill in the blanks. With Lola Vice, I like I just said, I had the exact same bias Kelly did. I really wasn't. I knew like I think it was Tom that was kind of high on her, if memory serves. But still, like, I wasn't quite sure what to expect going in here tonight. I thought actually everybody in the match pulled it off pretty well. Electra Lopez, I think this might have been the best she looked here tonight. I think she and Lola Vice had some great chemistry. They looked like two monster heels. Like, I really dug how they presented themselves tonight. No, they weren't, you know, they weren't completely polished and clean. And yeah, sure, there was a couple of things here and there that, you know, might have looked a little bit sloppy or whatever. But compared to what Electra Lopez was doing, what, a year ago, you know, when she was with Legado and all of that, it's night and day difference. So yeah, big, you know, like I said, the match itself happened, you know, wasn't a huge, like, staple in my night, but yeah, I think overall it's a net positive moving forward for everybody.
Bruce,
this also started with the women battling in the back when D'Angelo and Stax were meeting with the Street Profits.
I'm going to that next, so go ahead and roll it in.
Oh no, just that the Street Profits are kind of putting over D'Angelo, and Montez Ford almost seemed like he was going to challenge Carmelo Hayes for a title shot, and then after that, the Street Profits made it seem like they might challenge D'Angelo and Stax for a tag team shot in case they don't have anybody at No Mercy. And as they were talking, the women came through in the back and just were battling all the way through, and then he had the match. I said the first time that I saw Vice and Lopez battle or wrestle on screen together as a team that it seems like the two of them finding each other as a team has given both more confidence in their abilities. The one criticism, we had a lot of criticisms of Electra Lopez. The biggest one was basically the one we had about Gigi Dolan, is that she just seemed too hesitant in the ring with everything that she was doing. Ever since they become a tag team, she's really seemed like there's been no hesitancy. There's been no second guessing. It's really just been go, 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 and kind of belief in what they're doing. So, you know, good for all of them. It does suck for Kalani Jordan that she gets in there, she's the face against the obvious heels, yet they're cheering for the heel over you. And then Dana Brooke comes in, and oh my goodness, they had nothing good for Dana Brooke. And again, they're going against people who have been clearly marked and booked as heels. So that's, you know, the crowd sometimes, the crowd here is really weird. I'll give you that much. But it still doesn't signal a good thing that is that more skewed in one direction against people you've been building as especially Kalani Jordan. You've been trying to build her as a big baby face for the eventual Brooke heel turn on her, and yet the crowd, especially with Lola Vice on the opposite side of her, just was not buying it. I do like the tandem offense that Vice and Lopez already have together. Most impressed with it, especially kind of the double hip bump to the head when they have a seated opponent. I think that one is just perfectly encapsulates who they are as a tag team. And yeah, you know, Brooke is going to turn on Jordan soon enough, and we're going to get that match. And, you know, I'm assuming Jordan goes over and she goes on to have some kind of babyface run. But the match itself was better than expected, and that's a credit to all four women involved in the match for their continued training and improvement, and hopefully this continues for all four, regardless of who they're in the ring with and what kind of match they're in.
Yeah, you would prefer them not to react this way, but I mean, the common denominator is Lola Vice. I don't think there's any statement on Kehlani Jordan. I think this is all Lola Vice has an Instagram account, people.
Yes,
she does. And a certain type of guy is going to cheer her because he's not going to be able to help himself. I'm going to go to that show, and I'm going to boo the right people. Actually, I'm not going to boo anybody. I'm from Minnesota, and it feels like I shouldn't. just can't do it. It's hard for me to do. I don't know that I've booed I have screamed in anger, like when the Royal Rumble came down to John Cena, Ryback, and Sheamus about 3 hours after I typed to people, don't worry, guys, as long as it isn't one of these three guys, then I'll be fine. And then it was those three guys in the final three. There is live journal proof, which is kind of like having no proof because I don't know if live journal exists anymore. But there is live journal proof that I said, as long as it's not one of those three guys, and hours later, it was those three guys at the end. And I want it known that with Cena, I was just tired of the act. And with Sheamus, I was not yet in love with the act, and it had not hit the stride and the perfect situation that I like Sheamus, folks. I like him a lot, but I didn't. And Ryback, wow. I got nothing to say.
So apparently LiveJournal is a thing, and my LiveJournal from years ago is still up there. That's terrifying.
I got a few things on LiveJournal that are one-on-one conversations that I dare hope never get out anyway.
Yeah, just a reminder, it's the Ryback after Brian Danielson made that astute observation. So just putting it out there.
The Ryback. Got it.
The Ryback.
Okay. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin Catani, for asking what we thought about the Dyad and their contract situation. But we don't already talked about it. So we got one more email. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Let's talk some backstage stuff. Tony and Stacks, Mello and the Profits, we kind of covered. Mackenzie talked to Dragon Lee, and he talked about Dominic Mysterio kind of trying to put himself in place for a championship opportunity. But Mustafa Ali showed up, and gosh, I just love what a prick he is. He is so good at this. He's putting him over in the one side of his mouth and then saying, but you failed. I mean, you agree with me that somebody should have a chance, but you went out there, you struck out. It's my turn to be at the plate. Good stuff. I really, really like him in this role. I like him in any role. I'm just glad to see him on frickin' TV, but I really, really like him in this role. Ilya went out there, and he ended up having words with Noam Dar, who seemed like he was going to put himself in a match with Ilya next week, but instead it was Oro Mensah, which is nice because I don't think that Noam Dar needs to lose any matches or indeed have any televised matches until the end of this tournament. I think just being the prick who watches and is not a fighting champion is good enough for him, and have him get his reps off of TV. Von Wagner and Braun Breaker cut little promos on each other. Braun had a little scene with Corbin that I thought was suitably amusing, and Corbin like, I don't care about either one of you. I really liked the scene by Baron Corbin. Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams got a little chippy. That was fun. Chase and Duke, Thea Hale's going to hang out with JC Jane. I understand that this is the next point in the story, but you've got Thea Hale more popular than almost anybody on the roster, and you immediately put her with JC Jane. Like, I get it. I get where the story took her, but this is dangerous business. NXT Anonymous caught up with Fallon Henley talking to Miles Bourne. I think that's his name.
Yep, Miles Bourne.
Miles Bourne cleaning up garbage from the... You know, I don't know why what? NXT Anonymous would have shot this in the first place. Ooh, look at this. A woman who hasn't been on TV much lately and a guy who almost never has. I better get this on camera.
Here's the thing. NXT Anonymous is actually just secretly recording everything, but they only release the juicy stuff.
Beyond that, why the hell is the ring so dirty after a training session? But
I thought that. Like, were there wrestlers outside heckling them and throwing stuff into them?
Let's replicate an ECW crowd from the late 90s.
Oh yeah, Wes Lee is he's coming back next week. He's out there clearing his head, and he said he didn't lose to Carmelo Hayes. He lost to himself, and the title's coming to the West Coast. I'd leave that one on the cutting room floor, but whatever. Tyler Bate talked to McKenzie, and Dabba Kato was mentioned. So he's going to have a match with Dabba Kato before he gets into his tournament matches. The only thing I skipped was Garza and Carrillo with guys. I thought I'd have a lot to say about it. I don't have anything to say about it.
I just laughed throughout the entire thing. I'm sorry. I just did not help myself.
I don't even know. I don't even know what to say. They had this really wholesome, family-oriented angle, and now they're waking up with scars and slashes that look incredibly fake across their chest. I don't know if it's supposed to be a tattoo or what.
You know what it looked like?
What?
Did either of you two watch Impact at any time in the last, 20 years?
Closer to 20 than 10, though.
It looked like the Wolves, Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards.
American Wolves.
American Wolves. That's what it looked like to me. And I just could not stop laughing. Like, we're not watching Insidious here. Come on now.
You know, they had a match on NXT. That is something I found through my NXT 8 years back. They had a match with the Ascension, and it was the Ascension's best match on the brand. Like, it literally was. It was 3.5 minutes long, if that, but it was their best match.
I remember that
one with the Lucha Dragons that was pretty good too.
I remember that. Eddie Edwards is he's a local guy, so I actually remember like tuning in and seeing him, like, Eddie Edwards, like, holy shit. Yeah.
Okay, so Nate, there was a lot of stuff. Only talk about what was interesting.
Oh, man, there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of stuff. I mostly chimed in with things when I thought things were interesting anyway. So I'm sure I had some thoughts at some point along the way, but it's been a very long day, so I'm good.
Cool. Bruce, what do you got?
For me, I want to come back to the Trick Willie Carmelo Hayes segment, because Trick was still trying to act like, no, it's all good, my brother, you know, but Carmelo almost basically was blaming Trick for people doubting his victory at the GAB and tried to put it back on, like, I need to do it for myself. But what was interesting to me at during this interaction was Trick said, you know, I just talked to the Street Profits, and I was thinking, oh, are we going to get some kind of tag team match? But that's kind of left there hanging as some kind of it could be a red herring, but it could also be something that they're legitimately looking to have between these two, especially if you don't have anyone set up for Carmelo Hayes at No Mercy. Oh, wait, they do in Dragunov, what am I talking about? But it could be something to between now and No Mercy to have them do. But, you know, at the end of the show, Williams also went to Shawn Michaels' office. He was watching the Wesley promo on his phone, and he was about to knock and then decided to just open the door, and he said, look, we need to talk. So I hope Melo doesn't pull the Wesley and adds Wesley to the match at No Mercy to make it a triple threat. But it seems like what they're doing now is having Hayes go back to being a full-fledged heel, because his mannerisms tonight, how he entered the office kind of with that championship privilege or that ego, it seems all more on that heelish side. It's not that Mustafa Ali, earnest, trying to get under your skin, but everything he said has a point. Kind of a thing. It's not. He's just doing things with only himself and his whole focus in mind that he's kind of narrowed his vision too much to notice what's going on around him. So that interaction to me was what was most interesting from the non-match segments and the segments that didn't have any ties to the match, like the women's vignette. But they're eventually going to have a match, it seems like, between Trick and Melo, and they're setting the basis up well ahead of time, and I think they're doing a really good job here in the storytelling with their main men's champion as they move forward, because, you know, I could see Melo being there at the Royal Rumble as a surprise entrant, and then he's basically done with NXT, come stand and deliver. And maybe his way to I'm assuming he had dropped the title in between, and then at stand deliver, he kind of put over Trick as a little send-off and go off to SmackDown. So I think this interaction, and you tie it back to last week, these are what I'm looking forward to watching in terms of these two characters. I really am looking forward to seeing how they book this and how everything transpires.
All right, we got one more email. This is from Al in New York City. No last name, please. As always, Al, your secret's safe with me. Team Spooky Milk. Well, thank you. After Tommaso's upset victory over Bronson Reed, most of the crowd sat with their arms folded. NXT stalwarts Tommaso, Johnny Gargano, and Candice LeRae have just not gotten over on the main roster. Neither have Indy Hartwell or Cameron Grimes. Ridge Holland has been a bust. What went wrong? And also, would you have booked Luke Harper differently in WWE? Not overly differently, but when he was on the verge and it seemed like they could have made him a main eventer, I would have done it. I really would. They had, at one point, he got so hot, and I was there for this, by the way, because it happened at a SmackDown, I think one of the only two episodes of SmackDown I've been able to attend in the last 5 to 10 years. There was a match to determine who got, I think, was it a world championship match at WrestleMania? It was a big one that was coming up. And it was Harper against AJ Styles. And Harper was actually hot enough that we were all giving him a chance. We really were. Like, it didn't seem like something they would do, but he was so hot at that time, it seemed like that would have happened. I would have gone all the way with him. I just love him so much. And everything I've heard about him since has been so great. A heartbreaking end to that guy's story as well. Cool that you asked this question about Luke at this time, a proper time, unfortunately, to remember Luke as well. So I would have gone even further with this guy. I think he was booked well, but I would have gone even farther with him, even though he is clearly not the face and the beard that Vince McMahon is accustomed to pushing to the top of the card. As far as the others who haven't gotten over, I mean, a lot of their people have gotten over. So it's hard to say why one does and one doesn't, but I will say about Gargano and Ciampa, much of the way they got over was work rate. Gargano especially. They can do some character stuff, but they're not high concept people. I think Ciampa should be more over than he is, but he was derailed by his injury. Maybe it would have helped him to be there for Miz longer because he was such a good hype man for Miz when that's all they were asking of him. He was doing so well that way. I don't know how high they want him to move up anyway. I think they want him to be kind of a lower mid-card gatekeeper, and with that much gray in his beard, that might be about what he can do. Candice, I think she should be more over, but that's just because I really, really like her. Indy's fine. I want to see her succeed, but if she doesn't, I won't be surprised. Cameron Grimes, it feels like there is no response to the moon, and that's really hard for me to watch, like really hard, because I really, really like him. And Ridge Holland, I think he's got a hard ceiling as being a relatively quiet, tough guy doofus. So he's doing what I thought he was going to do. So your roster needs people all the way from the top to the bottom, and it's that simple. So there you go. Bruce, on this email.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bronson Reed's gotten over pretty well, I would say. Also, he's not a stalwart, but he was definitely an NXT first. You said things about Ciampa and Gargano. LeRae is just that when she was brought in, it wasn't the greatest time in the women's division. Then she had an injury. There's just been a lot of starts and stops with her. Hartwell, of course, went over when she was already injured. I think with Holland, she's in a group that still gets pretty good responses from the crowd and has pretty, you know, good placement. They're on pretty much every televised show or SmackDown, whichever brand they're on at this point. There's just too much going on. So I think, you know, you've done what you could with them. I do think with Tommaso Ciampa, they pairing him with The Miz, I think, really didn't do him any favors. And then, of course, he had another injury to deal with that didn't really help matters. When it comes to Luke Harper, he was always someone I thought could have done so much more with him. Just someone that size who moved like he did and was still able to do all the big man stuff. And didn't seem to over-exaggerate the things that you would take away from his act. Being able to embody that Wyatt family character, what I always remember about him and, you know, stood out the most was when he would land that big discus lariat, and then he would have the wide eyes as he looked out to the crowd or looked over at Bray Wyatt. Just, you know, it. Not many people had that kind of charisma. And beyond that, that IC title run he had, I thought it really showed the potential that they had in him in terms of a top-line champion. And yeah, he didn't get there. I thought AEW, he would go a little more than he did. He did, you know, he got the TNT championship run, and that's cool. But I felt like with all the hype they had to revealing who the Exalted One was, that they should have really just booked him straight to the top. I know they had a plan with Jericho, Omega, Moxley, and then Paige, but just everything you put into it, I think Harper is one of those that really the potential. He was about to come into his potential in pro wrestling, and then he was tragically taken from everybody. And, you know, Bray Wyatt is one of those who he did get to see those heights, but he still had so much more as well. And, you know, it's just really sad. And, yeah, Luke Harper, I think, is one of the ones you'll look back on from the 2010s and think of, why did WWE drop the ball so much with this guy when there was so much they could have done with him? So they gave a bigger push to Eric Rowan, and that's stupid, unfortunately.
I forgot about that.
Champion. So if it was me, I would have definitely booked Luke Harper differently. I would have booked him to be, you know, a longer reigning IC champion and even a world champion title challenger, because you just don't see talents like that every day.
You know, I was kind of hoping at the end of that story with the cage, it was going to be the gobbledygooker that came out of it. But alas, I believe, folks, that is our show. A lot of the show has come together for next week. So we already kind of know what we're going to get. Imagine that, folks, wrestling show promoting stuff that is going to be on next week's show. But I'll tell you what, I got to go because I still have to watch 8 years ago NXT. Nate's got to go because he's on the East Coast and it's getting late. And Bruce has to go because Alex Cobb just completed the eighth inning of a no-hitter. So
with Austin Slater making a diving catch that I thought had no chance of being caught. Oh, my goodness. Let's go. One more inning.
Defense has got to show up in big moments like that. So Austin Slater did. Mm-hmm. All right,
go
folks.
Sports ball.
I am. Mm-hmm. Stop with the sports ball. Sports ball jokes are over. It is done. All right, folks.
Your Baldur's Gate, Nate.
I plan to.
Oh, boy. Folks, that is it. We will fizzle out here, and I will see you in 7. Cheers.